Episode number 21 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards, definitely the best boil and bite mouthguard I've ever had. Head on over to sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 to save 10% on your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
I told you I had a couple more great interviews. Episode number 21 of the podcast. It's Thursday, June 21st, first day of summer. Lots of fights this weekend. Let's get into it. All right, episode number 21 of the podcast. Thanks a lot to First Row and Sisu for sponsoring. Like I said, couple more big interviews today. We've got referee Kevin McDonald. You might have seen him in the UFC, Bellator. He was a referee at NEF 34 last weekend in Portland. He's going to be on sharing his thoughts on the rules and regulations, and he's going to offer us some more clarity on some of the tougher calls that are made. You know, grounded opponent, you've got the unified rules. There's some states and commissions that don't use them. So let's just get right into the interview with Kevin. So you had NEF 34 this past weekend. I mean, great event, eh?
Oh, man, it was great. We finished like 11 fights in like an hour, 10 minutes.
Man, that's what I was surprised. You know, I watch a lot of international events and a lot of ACB, and that's kind of what I compared it to. Like, you know, their big thing is, you know, you have the fights and then it's over and they go to the next one. And yeah, you're completely right. I mean, 18 fights, I figured, geez, this is going to take a while. We're going to be here till 1 or 2 in the morning. It was done at what, like 10:30, quarter to 11?
Right.
But yeah,
well,
I know.
They also have for that venue, they have a smaller cage.
Yeah.
18 feet. And an 18-foot cage, you know, actually in some commissions, they don't allow you to go below 20.
Oh, okay.
But, one of the nice things about the 18 is you got a fight, man. There's nowhere to run.
Yeah, for sure. You got into MMA quite a while ago, right?
Yeah. I believe my first fight was 99, I think.
And so you fought professionally and then transitioned into refereeing. Was it a smooth transition?
Yeah, pretty much accidental. You know, I was living down in Texas, and I was training with Eve Edwards and those guys, and we'd just go wherever to get fights. It was back in the Wild West, and then I moved back to the Boston area because I had been down in Texas going to embalming school because my family's in the funeral business.
Yeah.
And when I moved back, like, there weren't any MMA schools. There were jiu-jitsu schools, there were Thai boxing schools, and you pretty much just had Kip Collar and Bruce Marshall were the only two doing shows, and they were usually the pancration, the open hand to the face. And then it was one of those things where one time someone didn't show, hey, can you rep it? Yeah, sure. And then I started. It was just too difficult to drive to Revere for kickboxing and go, you know, over to Watertown Jiu-Jitsu and going here and there. And, you know, I didn't love training like that anymore. It was kind of a burden. And refereeing, you know, it was a way to stay involved and, you know, always figured I'd get back into it. And then just, you know, there's a period of time where every fight you ref, you're like, man, I want to get back in there. And then there's a certain moment where it changes and the athleticism goes up and you begin to think, good Lord, I never want to get in there again.
Yeah, I mean, you've refereed, you know, UFC events, Bellator events. You've done, you know, the NEF event this past weekend. When you go to do these events, do you do many international ones?
Yeah, in the last 3 years, the international's picked up with Bellator going over there and UFC as well. I've been able to do, I think, Brazil 3 times, Mexico City once, Italy a couple of times, Israel once, once, and hoping Bellator's getting busy again in the fall, and they're doing more UK shows, so we'll see.
Awesome. So when you go to do those shows, how does it work? Do you have to get licensed in every state that they fight in?
So it depends on who you're working with. What Bellator does, when they go international, they hire the Mohegan Tribe, Mike Mazzulli.
Yep.
They hire the Mohegan Tribe to be the sanctioning body.
Okay.
So that's how a lot of us end up going over there. So we're actually, if you look at any international Bellator events, we're wearing Mohegan Tribe shirts. Okay. Because that's the sanctioning body, because most European nations don't have those. Okay. When you go to like Brazil or Mexico or places with the UFC, usually they have like a newer commission that the UFC kind of helps guide. Like initially, they formed CAB MMA down in Brazil, and they got Cristiano on board, Sampaio, who's in charge of CAB, and they would bring a lot of Western officials down, and then as Brazilian officials started getting more proficient, we started using more of them, and then you've seen CAB actually reach out, because when UFC just did a show recently in Santiago, Chile, it was actually CAB from Brazil who was sanctioning the show in Chile.
Okay. You know, all the different sanctioning bodies, it's kind of tough. I noticed there in Maine this past weekend, they didn't adopt the new unified rules. Is that something that's tough when you're refereeing an event, you know, going from rule to rule?
I don't think so. A lot of people like to make a big deal out of it. And I think that the best thing for the sport is everybody gets on board. But I also come from the days of refereeing in a ring where we had three different rule sets on the same night. And, you know, so to compare, you know, the definition of a grounded opponent as opposed to what we used to have to deal with, like, it's not that tough. Yeah. But I think it makes for a much better fight, a much more fair fight, when everybody's on the same set of rules. And I'm also on the Rules and Regs Committee for the ABC. So we wrote those updated rules specifically to try to clean things up. Yeah. And most of the people that are against it, it's strictly for political reasons, nothing else.
Okay. Just to get into some specifics, I know from week to week we see different, you know, rule infractions and people end up questioning them. Just want to get your take on some of the different things. You know, you have a fighter that, you know, first eye poke, a lot of people say they should take a point automatically. It should be 5 minutes, and then the fighter can either decide to continue or not. What's your take on that? I mean, should the fighter get the full 5 minutes? Should you rush them back into the fight? I mean, we see it differently, and I guess it's a pretty situational question, but I just wanted to get your take on it.
So when you have sort of subjective things, and if we're talking about eye pokes, it's a very... Sometimes it's the knuckle, sometimes it's the corner of the glove, sometimes it's the toe. Like, you never want to lay down rules in this sport that's still developing, that's still changing. You never want to lay down rules where the referee has to do this.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to like it. Because sometimes there's things that look like eye pokes, and then, you know, you see on the replay, it wasn't, it was a knuckle, or you think there wasn't, and then there was, and if you start taking mandatory points, you're going to have a problem. I'll give you an example. Some people have said, hey, if someone grabs the cage, that should be an immediate point deduction. Well, here's the deal. If you're going to say that, if we're at the beginning of a round, and I'm like, are you ready, yes, go, and the fighter on the other side of the cage, just out of a nervous habit, reaches back and grabs the cage, hey, according to that rule, I should be taking a point.
Yeah.
So what I do is, like, when I tell fighters in the back, I'll say, look, here's how I look at bench grabs. If you grab the fence in a way which affects the fight, then me as the official, I'm going to look to affect the fight as well. So if you straight up defend a takedown by automatically going straight to a point deduction. If you have the mount position and the guy goes to buck you off and you quickly grab the fence to maintain position, I'm probably going to call time and I'm going to take that dominant position away from you. So however much the scale is upset is how much action I will take to try to right those scales. Once you start making things mandatory, again, sometimes, you know, guys are, you know, flying through the air or something and they reach out and it happens. And, you know, but as a referee, you need to acknowledge, how did that affect the fight? How much should I get involved? And if you stay in mandatory point, I had a title fight between Melvin Manhoff and Rafael Carvalho. And I went straight to a one-point deduction on the fence grab because it prevented the takedown. And it got all this, you know, drama, like, oh, I can't believe that. Like, I feel that's the way more referees should be treating the situation. And you're seeing that more and more, especially at the upper levels. Yeah. Did that fence grab change things? Yes, it did. Can I, you know, I've heard some referees, like, if you grab the fence and defend a takedown, I'm going to then put you in the grounded position in the guard because that, and it's like, no, man, like, that didn't happen. You're now affecting the fight in a way which we don't know if that would have happened or not. So you can only really work with what you got.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I've seen it in different leagues. I'll point out one. I mean, M1, where they have that kind of cage ring hybrid. As soon as a fighter touches that ring, that's it. That can be a point deduction. But as well, sometimes you'll see a foul on the ground, and I know there's one referee. If there's a foul on the ground, he lets the fighter get out of the position to hammer fist the other fighter in the feet. So a little bit of a strange thing and something you don't normally see. But yeah, it's definitely got to be subjective and pretty difficult in the moment to call eye pokes, groin shots, cage grabs. What have you. Are you working any events this weekend?
No, I'm actually heading down to West Virginia because their commission their guys have to get retested annually.
Yep.
Like some states. So I'm going down there to teach a referee and judge refresher for those guys. Then I got a local show, Combat Zone, in New Hampshire the next week. And then, as of now, I got some time off. Next show I know I got, I think it's end of August, UFC.
Awesome, Kevin. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Hopefully we can have you on again.
Of course, man. Anytime you guys have any questions or want any explanations or things like that, don't hesitate. I mean, one quick thing I'll throw you, because there's always so much misinformation going around. When it comes to the downed opponent, you have two rules. The old rule is anything other than the soles of the feet. So it doesn't mean you have to have, you know, palm down or this or that. It's anything other than the soles of the feet. So what we found guys doing was they were putting the one finger down, mouth in the hand, playing the game, as we call it.
Yeah.
So as Rules and Regs Committee, we came together and we said, hey, look, how do we prevent this? And we looked at, like, the NFL and things like that. So in the spirit of fighting, placing one finger on the ground to avoid strikes doesn't really jive. There was a little blowback when we wanted to say the hands didn't count to some folks that said, well, if someone's in the push-up position, they can't properly defend themselves, so you're going to allow a soccer kick there? So we said, all right, here's the deal. If both palms and or fists are on the ground, and the only other thing touching is the feet, then we'll consider them a downed opponent. It's kind of foolish because nobody in the real world would ever be in the push-up position while their opponent is able to come and kick them in the face. But we said, all right, you know, we'll take that. So when we meet with fighters, I find the easiest way to describe the new rule is to say, hey, look, if you wish to down yourself so that you don't take knees or kicks to the head, do not try to use your hands because it's dangerous. And then I have them squat down. They put one hand down. It's always their fingers. Their other hand down. One palm down. Then once they put the second palm down, you can usually hear a little like, because they're actually putting weight on it. and we can't define putting weight, but we know that if you're only on your feet and both palms or both fists are down, you're supporting weight, you can't properly defend yourself. Now, if you do that intentionally, your opponent's going to punch you in the face or jump on your back. You don't want that. So if you wish to down yourself safely and fairly, drop one knee, keep protecting yourself, and that's the way the rule was written.
For sure. Well, thanks again, Kevin. Yeah, I'm sure in the coming months, you know, we're going to need some rule clarifications. There seems to be something that comes up every other week. And yeah, hopefully we can have you on again.
Anytime, brother. Good luck with the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kevin. Definitely awesome to have Kevin McDonald on the podcast. I mean, a recognizable face that you see on television week in and week out doing major MMA events. And I'm really glad that at the very end, he took the time to explain the grounded opponent rule. And with the new unified rules of MMA and certain states and commissions not adopting them, it's kind of tough for viewers at home. People are scoring it from their couch. It's kind of hard to tell what a grounded opponent is and what it isn't. And as well, you know, the discretion of referees when it comes to giving and taking with fouls. So awesome to have Kevin on. For sure he's going to be on again, and I really appreciate him being on. So now it's time for us to look into some of the fights from this weekend. But at the same time, we also had Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series this past week. 5 fights and 5 finishes. And so on this past week, there were 4 contracts handed out. You had Matt Sales, Anthony Hernandez, Ryan Spann, and Dwight Grant getting contracts. Sales was the main event, knocked out Yazan Hadji, you know, Yazzle Dazzle. Knocked him out in the first round. You also had Anthony Hernandez taking on Jordan Wright, knocked him out at 40 seconds of the first round. The fight that I figured was going to be probably fight of the night, the most interesting one, was the featherweight bout between Austin Springer and Giga Chikadze. I figured Chikadze, where he had the background in kickboxing, fought for glory, you know, kind of similar to a Gokhan Saki coming over to the UFC, would be able to get the win. But, I mean, with those kickboxing guys, you got to be nervous on the ground. And Springer was able to get the win by rear naked choke at 4:10 of the third round. And then, like I said, Spann, you know, he beat Emiliano Sordi, who's a young guy, Argentinian, got him in a guillotine. Definitely not a strong suit down on the ground. And as well, your first fight of the night, welterweight bout between Dwight Grant and Tyler Hill. Grant got the knockout at 2:08 of the second round. And that was kind of a tough one to call for me because neither one of the guys had fought in, geez, getting close to 2 years. So another great Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. And week 3 is coming at you June 26th, headlined by Antonina Shevchenko. That's, you know, Valentina's sister. Make sure to have a look for week 3 of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series next week. Tonight, big card, PFL number 2. So I told you I'd give you my breakdown this week, and we'll get right into it. So the card's chock full of, you know, recognizable faces and names that used to compete in the UFC. We'll go bottom to top. I think it's a really interesting card. I mean, these guys are fighting, and women, they're fighting based on a point system similar to, you know, your bigger name sports, your NHL, your MLB, something like that, where this is the regular season, you know, you rack up your points, then you go into playoffs, and it just goes from there. So your first fight of the night is between Bezaghit Ataev, nicknamed Little Volk. He's 18-1, only loss coming to Alistair Overeem at Pride in 2002. And this guy, you know, he took a lot of time off. He fought, geez, early on in the 2000s, and then he took some time off, fought 2006, 2007, then a 10-year break. He was supposed to fight, actually, Gilbert Ivel at Pride 34 in 2007. Took a long break for 10 years, fought Jeremy May at Kunlun Fight MMA 10, and that was back last year. And now he's fighting Dan Spawn. Don't expect Bezaghit to win. I mean, that's a tough challenge, taking that much time off. Plus, you're fighting Dan Spawn, a guy who's 16-5 overall. Kind of a recognizable name. You know, he's been around the block. He's fought for different organizations. He was on the Contender Series last year. He's fought at Hard Knocks in Canada, among other. He was on the Ultimate Fighter season 19. So, recognizable guy there. And, you know, PFL, they've done a really good job of getting guys that have been on the Contender Series, guys that have competed for LFA, different organizations, and guys kind of who've made their way out of the UFC. And a really important night there, again, for PFL. That fight there is a light heavyweight fight. Your next one, it's a lightweight fight between Chris Wade and Netan Schult. you know, more UFC names. Also on the card at lightweight, you've got Thiago Tavares taking on Robert Whatley. Really interesting fight there. I mean, Tavares was just recently in the UFC, got a really good record, and could be one of those guys that, you know, don't sleep on him. There's a possibility he could win that lightweight tournament. I mean, wins over Clay Guida, Justin Salas, but he's got losses to guys like Khabib in the UFC, as well as Brian Ortega and Duho Choi. So don't sleep on Thiago Tavares for sure. Some more fights that are on the card. You know, my up-and-comer from Tuesday, Rashid Yusupov, taking on Rakeem Cleveland. If I was a guy making picks, I'd pick Rashid Yusupov to get the win there. I mean, like I said on Tuesday, Cleveland, he's a well-traveled guy. He's been around the block, but definitely a guy you got to keep your eyes on. As well, Vinny Magalhaes is on the card, taking on Jamie Abdallah. Magalhaes, another UFC guy. Brandon Halsey on the card. You've also got Ronnie Marcus, Fran Escudero taking on Jason High. I mean, Escudero faced some top-notch competition when he was still in the UFC. Escudero actually weighed in heavy, so he gets no points out of his fight tonight, but still the fight's on. Lots of different guys there. Let's see. I mean, the last time he fought in the UFC was at UFC 197, where he lost to Kevin Lee, but wins over Drew Dober. Definitely somebody you don't want to sleep on in this tournament. I mean, geez, we saw last week's winner of the main event got 3 points in the contest. There were other guys that got first-round finishes good for 6 points. So it's a lot of fun. All the guests I've had on so far are really excited about it. Also on the card, just before your co-main, you've got former U.S. Olympian Kayla Harrison. She's taking on Brittany Elkin, who's 3-4. Expect Harrison to make a big debut. I think she's part of the broadcast team with PFL. I know I didn't mention her name a couple weeks ago, but I've seen her with a mic in her hand. Also, your co-main, you've got Brian Foster sitting at 27-10, taking on Ramzy Nijem, who's 9-6, two former UFC guys. And then in your main event, you've got Luis Firmino sitting at 20-8, taking on Will Brooks, 18-4. I mean, he had a bit of a skid there in the UFC, but a former Bellator champ, and looks pretty good on the cover of that PFL poster. Also, I saw that he threw out one of the first pitches at a White Sox game this past week. So PFL number 2 coming at you live. It's in Chicago, and definitely a card you should be checking out this weekend. And speaking of, you know, events you should be checking out, last weekend, like I said, I was at NEF 34, and I opened up the broadcast that I had a couple of interviews. I've got an interview coming at you now from the winner of the main event this past weekend at NEF 34, Damon Blackshear, and totally dominated in his fight against Aaron Lacy. And I just wanted to get his thoughts on, you know, how he kind of trained for the fight and what could be next for him. So here's Damon. Yes, sir. So, what was it like fighting in Maine for the first time?
It was a pretty awesome place, man. Everybody was pretty cool out there. Every people I met, we had to take Uber a couple times, and the guys that Ubered us around was pretty good, amazing. Like, they chatted our heads off stuff. Like, just meeting people around there was pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it was cold when we got down there too. So we're coming down from North Carolina, where it's like 100 degrees right now.
Yeah,
went down there and it was pretty cool. So that was pretty good.
Yes, sir. Was it your first fight out of North Carolina?
Oh no, I fought in the neighboring states. I also fought down in Texas near Oklahoma and stuff like that.
Okay,
but I think that's my first fight I've taken really in the Northeast.
So I mean, fight was at 145. Do you prefer bantamweight or featherweight?
Bantamweight. There's not really a cut on when I fight at 45.
Yeah.
I probably was walking around like 52, and that was me trying to force myself up, trying to gain weight. I normally walk around like 48, so okay. Not really a cut.
I mean, going into the fight, like I had it scored 30-27. I mean, one of the judges agreed with me, but you got unanimous decision win. I thought you dominated the fight. What was the game plan going into that fight?
Definitely, my coach just didn't want me to play to his game, which is like just brawl, go out there and brawl with him. So every once in a while, I got carried away, but I stuck with the game plan. Coach walked me over to the corner and was like, "Hey, man, there's no need to do that. Just stick to the game plan, take him down, and play that game." Even though I felt like I was pretty good on the feet with him, it was just closer than when it was on the ground. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I mean, you dominated the scrambles. You got him up against the cage and the clinch quite a bit, and you were able to land some shots there and you know, push the pace. And you've got, what, 7-1 amateur record, 5-1 as a pro. So what's next?
It's a couple fights, fight offers I have. So I'm just picking and choosing, just all over the board. Like LFA, we got contact with them, so that would be awesome fight for them. I'd like to be on that contender series. That would be pretty cool too. You know what I mean? So, just looking around.
Sounds good. Well, I mean, that's all I got for you. It was great having you on, and I certainly appreciate it, and hopefully you're able to get back into the cage soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm already training right now, so that's always good.
Awesome, right, man.
Thank you for having me on, man.
Thanks again. I mean, great to have Damon on. If you have a chance, go online, watch his fight at NEF against Aaron Lacy. Aaron definitely had that type of brawler mentality, brawler style. And there were a couple times where, in the second round for sure, he came ahead, fist flying. Damon was able to kind of lean back a bit, get out of the way, counter strike, and then get him back into the clinch against the cage and, you know, pot shots. And when he got the fight to the ground, he definitely looked very comfortable there. But at the same time, when they were exchanging shots, he was doing a really good job of countering. So definitely a prospect that you should be watching out for. Like I said, 12-2 overall as a pro and an amateur. And he's got a chance at getting a contract in LFA right now. So a lot of talent in LFA has been able to, you know, work their way up through the ranks and go into whether it's Bellator or the UFC. And as we've seen with Ian Heinisch and Jeff Hughes, couple champions in LFA, fighting on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. So the sky's the limit, I think, for Damon, and it'll be really exciting to see what's next for him. So before I get into breaking down the rest of the cards from this weekend, you've got UFC, you've got ONE, you've got Road FC, and you've also got LFA. I'd like to take the chance to thank my sponsors. So today we're brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Like I said in the intro, head on over to their website at firstrow.ca. Use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order. I mean, they have baseball collectibles, MMA collectibles, old, you know, magazines, autographed hockey cards, baseball cards, the list goes on. There's also a 50 cent bin. And, you know, I was over there today, Wendell Clark autographs, some Ron Farouk Simmons from the WWE, some Bret Hart autographs as well. Lots of neat stuff over there at First Row. And we had Curtis from First Row on the podcast quite a while back. You didn't hear the interview with him. Really big wrestling fan. Also had the chance to bring Roland DeLorme into Winnipeg. And there's some Roland DeLorme autographs on the website as well. So head on over to First Row and use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. And if you've never seen a Sisu Mouthguard, it's a really thin boil and bite mouthguard. You can talk with it in, you can drink with it in. It's not like a big bulky rubber mouthguard, so it doesn't get the back of your teeth and you won't gag when you have it in. And I've had one for a number of years now, and like I say every week, I mean, the one game I didn't wear it, no word of a lie, I lost my front tooth, and it was a pain. So right now, they're a proud partner with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation in the States, dedicated to raising funds for research into new treatment and cures for children battling cancer. And that's definitely a subject close to home. So from June 2018 to 2019, every yellow mouthguard purchased from their site, it's got to be the Aero or the Junior styles, it'll result in a 10% donation to the ALSF. So if you use the promo code FNP10, you'll save 10% at checkout, and make sure you head on over there and look at the yellow mouthguards. They'll be giving a donation to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, battling childhood cancers. So as of right now, PFL is going on in the background. I got the headphones in, listening to what's going on there. But also this weekend, you've got LFA 43. It's coming at you Friday at 9 o'clock Eastern from Beaumont, Texas. Main event's a middleweight bout between 8-3 Brendan Allen and 10-6 Larry Crow. If you look into it, Crow's challenged for the middleweight title before. Allen, of his 8 wins, they're all finishes. He's got 3 knockout wins, 5 submission wins, and recent losses to Eric Anders and Anthony Hernandez, who are two guys that wound up in the UFC. And both of those losses were by decision as well. Crow, he's 1-6 in his last 4. Won a split decision in his last fight. One of those losses was to Ryan Spann, who was just on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series this week and got a contract. So take Brennan Allen in that fight. You know, he's been more active, and at the same time, he's a lot more well-rounded if you watch some of the fight tape. Also on that card, your co-main event is a featherweight bout. You got 6-0 Jake the Grinder Heffernan, and he's taking on 6-3 Peter Stanonik. So, it's a hard fight to call, really. I mean, neither one of the guys have fought any big names. Stanonik fought last month in a 5-round decision, won that one there. But expect Heffernan to get the win and push that unbeaten streak to 7 wins. Also this weekend, another card on Saturday morning. You've got one championship, Pinnacle Power from Beijing. Two title fights on the card, your main events for the flyweight belt. You got one mainstay, 17-2, Adriano Moraes, taking on 10-6, Jehei Eustaquio. You know, it's a pretty easy fight to call if you look at the numbers. Moraes, you know, he's been at the top of the division and won for a long time. Eustaquio, he's a decision fighter. He's got kind of a salty record. So take the champ there to hold on to the belt. It should be a win by submission. He's got an awful lot of them and a great, you know, not one to pick on records, but 17-2 record for Moraes. And he's one of those mainstay guys in one. He's been there for a very long time. Your co-main event, one of the best bouts this weekend. And if you get a chance to watch it, please, I implore you, have a look at it. Co-main is between, strawweight title bout, champ 11-1, Zhang Jinan taking on 10-2 Laura Balin. And you know, you're gonna say, well, why is it such a great fight to watch? That crowd is gonna go nuts from Beijing. You know, Jinan, she's a boxer, she's a Chinese BJJ star, one of the biggest stars in China right now in MMA. She's the lone Chinese champion out there right now in any of the major organization. But at the same time, Laura Balin, she's one of South America's best strawweights, and she's a BJJ master in her own right. But expect Jingnan to push the show. I mean, she's in front of a home crowd. She's going to excel at striking, and she's going to retain the belt. I mean, Balin hasn't fought outside of South America, and she's been off for 2 years. So expect Jingnan to get the win in front of her home crowd. And then the biggest card this weekend, you've got UFC Fight Night 132 from Singapore on Saturday morning. Undercard starts at 4:30 a.m. Eastern, and the main card starts at 8 o'clock Eastern. So have a shot of espresso for that one. I'm going to focus on some of the most exciting and important fights on the card. You know, I believe there's 13 bouts on there, but some of them are, you might not focus on it. And again, it might be one I've seen a lot of people on Twitter right now, they're going to DVR it. I put up a poll yesterday to kind of gauge fan interest. And I said, what's the biggest card you're going to be paying attention to this weekend? You've got Road FC featuring, you know, our former guest, Jeff Houston, in-ring announcing. You've also got, like I said, UFC Singapore 1 and LFA and an overwhelming amount of people and PFL too. And, you know, I had a couple votes for PFL, the lone vote for 1FC, and then overwhelming majority for UFC Fight Night 132 in Singapore. So the fights that I find most interesting and that are noteworthy, you know, you've got a welterweight bout between 10-2 Shinzo Anzai, and he's taken on 13-3 Jake Matthews. I mean, Matthews won his last fight against Li Jingliang this year. Jingliang's also on the card. Kind of a head-scratcher to me, to be completely honest with you, because Jake Matthews won that fight. Jingliang lost, and I'm going to speak to it a little bit later, but it doesn't make any sense why you have the guy that won the fight fighting lower on the card than the guy that lost. But I guess, you know, fights in Singapore. At the same time, Jake Matthews from Australia. So it's kind of, you know, a little different. But Anzai, you know, he's 2-1 in the UFC. He's been able to get 7 knockout wins on his record. At the same time, Matthews, he has 10 finishes out of 13 wins. And I expect the younger Matthews to kind of push the pace. But it'll probably be a fight that ends up going to decision. Like I said, also on the cards, first fight on the main card, you got Li Jingliang taking on Daichi Abe. Jingliang trains at a China top team, and they really put a lot of emphasis on that. Big star in China. He's 14-5 overall. And he could still be a player at the welterweight, you know, in the welterweight division. But that tough loss against Jake Matthews in his last fight, and he kind of gained a pretty bad reputation in my eyes. You know, he had an awful eye gouge that really cut up Matthews' eye. And not something that you want to see. But so he's taking on Daichi Abe. Abe's 6-1 total. Lost his last fight to Luke Jumo. And I expect Jingliang to get the win. I wouldn't be surprised if it's by knockout. Both guys have 9 knockout wins combined. It's really evenly matched fight. Metrics-wise, they're almost identical in striking. But at the same time, Jing Liang also has a lot of submission wins, more than Abe, and he could get it to the ground and get the submission. I mean, Abe, if you look at his metrics as well, he's not really well versed on the mat, doesn't get a lot of takedowns, and doesn't have to stuff a lot of takedowns because he usually gets a knockout and keeps it standing. But yeah, expect Jing Liang to get the win there. Also on the main card, you get number 9 overall women's flyweight, Jessica Rose Clark, taking on number 10, Jessica Ai. Rose Clark, she's won 3 in a row, including UFC wins over Beck Rawlings and Paige VanZant. And Ai, she lost 4 in a row before winning her last bout against Clint Jafaria in January. You know, if you really look into it, she's fighting top talent, but the last of the 4 losses was against Betch Kohea. So I got to kind of discount that there a little bit. I expect Jessica Rose Clark to continue to climb up those rankings and most likely get the win in that fight. Your co-main event is a really tough fight to call. Really hard one. Had to do a lot of homework on it. Light heavyweight matchup between number 7 OSP and he's taking on number 13 Tyson Pedro. I mean, Pedro, his hype train was kind of derailed a little bit by Alir Latifi. But then again, so was OSP's. I mean, OSP's had a lot of big fights, but at the same time, Pedro was up-and-comer. He was 6-0, fought Latifi, got the loss, but he's 7-1 now, had an impressive Kimura win in his last fight, facing another tough test against St. Preux coming up. And I mean, St. Preux, he's 22-11, he's got 17 finishes, had 2 Von Flew wins before knocking out Beast in 25-8, the worst nickname. I mean, Daywalker was pretty bad the other week with Rashad Coulter, but Corey Anderson, Beast in 25-8. Yeah. OSP fought top talent, top caliber guys. Tyson Pedro, if you look at his record, like I said, 7-1, 5 submission wins, 2 knockout wins. But like I said, OSP fought the best around. I mean, he lost a decision to John Jones at UFC 197 with a broken arm. So pick OSP in that fight. I think he's going to do something funky, and he's going to be able to get back into the win column. I mean, head kick knockout there against Beast in 25-8. My goodness. But the Von Flews, impressive fights overall, and OSP in that one. And then for your main event, I saw, you know, guest and friend of the show, Ty O'Keefe, right, wrote a great article about Donald Cerrone and how he's just, you know, he's here to stay. And I find it a hard fight to call. I mean, Cerrone's 33-10. He had a loss to Jorge Masvidal, Robbie Lawler, and Darren Till, those 3, in under 8 months. And then he took some time off and beat Yancy Medeiros in February. Now, he beat Yancy Medeiros. All right. He's got 25 finishes and 33 wins. Breaking it down by the metrics, he throws 4.24 significant strikes per round compared to Leon Edwards' 2.17. I mean, the takedown metrics are close, but only 3 of Leon Edwards' wins, they've come by submission, compared to 16 of Cerrone. So I don't expect the fight to go to the ground. I expect it to stay standing. And, you know, I think Edwards is going to be able to live up to his Rocky nickname. He's going to weave in and out. He's going to try and land more strikes and draw out a decision. And for a good litmus test on Leon Edwards, look at his win over Vicente Luque. Edwards doubled the strikes, and in the 3rd round, he pounced, and he had, you know, 35 of 65 total strikes were significant over Luque's 15 of 28. Now, I know it's going to go into championship rounds as a 5-round fight, but I think Edwards is going to be able to pull out another win, and who knows who he could end up fighting in that division. I mean, he's already fought Kamaru Usman once, but who knows? It's a pretty wide-open welterweight division. So that about does us for episode number 21 of the podcast. I'd like to thank our sponsors, First Row Collectibles and also Sisu Mouthguards. And we'll be back again early next week with some more great guests and more content. I'll have another up-and-comer, and hopefully you enjoy your weekend and the fights that are on tap. I'm going to head down to Beantown and watch a couple of ball games. That's why this one's coming out on Thursday. But we'll see you again early next week.